Wake up. There's no sleeping in on Saturday. It's time for the Paul Santos Show on WBSM. Join Paul as he tackles local issues, current events, and fun conversations. Call 508-996-0500 or send Paul an app chat message on the WBSM app. Hey, hey, hey. Now, here's Paul Santos. What you got
to say? All right, welcome back to hour number two of the Paul Santos Radio Show. Glad to have you listening in. We have a very special guest that's joining us live here in the studio. Many people in the area know Tom. Attorney Thomas Hunt served in the New Bedford School Committee many years back. Might even be better known, or at least equally as known, as a political analyst, both in the newspaper and, of course, on radio and television. Had the great honor of working with him many election nights on television and on local social media. We welcome to our microphones here, Mr. Thomas Hunt. Hello, Tom.
Paul, thank you very much for having me.
All right. Why don't you move that microphone just a little bit closer, and that way we can hear you loud and clear. Well, it's always fun having Tom on because Tom always has great insight when it comes to politics, both locally and nationally. But today we're actually talking about something quite different, and that is the Ride of Silence. The Ride of Silence is going to take place this coming Wednesday, May 15th, and it really unites the globe as like nothing does. Cyclists will take the roads in silent procession to honor cyclists who have been killed or injured while cycling on public roadways, and that's what brings Tom to us today. So Tom, of course, this event is very, very close to your heart.
That's right, Paul. Actually, the ride will be Wednesday, May 21st, leaving from the Dartmouth High School on Bakerville Road at 7 p.m. We're asking people to get there at 6:45 p.m. There's no need to get there any earlier. And I'll be going over the particulars of the ride. It is designed to mirror a funeral cortege, but on bicycles. So it's a short ride, only 8 miles, about as flat terrain as we can find in New England. And it's done single file at a very short speed. The Ride of Silence, Paul, began in Texas approximately 24 years ago. A young emergency room physician at a local Dallas hospital was killed, and an avid cyclist, I should say, was killed while riding his bicycle. At his funeral service a few days later, his friends commented that the cyclist would not be happy for them sitting around crying in their beers, so perhaps some sort of a little ride could be put together. And the hope was, with a break from the weather, perhaps they could get 75 people there. They actually ended up with just under 1,100. It is now conducted throughout the world: Canada, Mexico, Latin America, South America, Asia, Europe. This year, they've added a new site, Tel Aviv in Israel. And this year's ride in Dartmouth is dedicated to my son, Eric Hunt, who was killed while riding his bicycle in Boston in April of 2010, literally just blocks from his college apartment.
Yeah, and I apologize before because I was reading off the press release from 2024. But yes, it's this coming Wednesday, May the 21st. And I know you have promoted these before and participated in them before, correct?
I have. I've done them in Vermont. I've done them in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Connecticut. But this is the first one I've hosted. And for anyone who's ever lost a child, I think they can relate. It's pain beyond almost belief. So it's really taken me 15 years to get up the shall we say, the moral courage to put it together. The ride leaves at 7 p.m. Local time. Whether you're in Dublin or London or Paris, or Boston or Atlanta, Georgia. So it will leave precisely at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 21st, from the Dartmouth High School parking lot.
And, of course, no one is looking for money. Nobody's asking for donations. This is just a tribute that you are involved with in this rite of silence and tribute to Eric.
That's correct. No donations will be solicited. No donations will be accepted. If someone attempts to hand me three-quarters for a little flower for Eric's grave, they'll be handed the three-quarters back. No, there is no charge.
I was going to ask you that question about how you could put it into words of what it's like to lose a child, and you actually answered the question already, pain beyond possible belief. And I know a number of people, quite a few people that I know, that have endured this, trying to get over it past 2010, 11, 12. I know you never get over it. That pain must stay. People tell me it stays. Only you would know that. I mean, how do you even get up in the morning after something like that? It must have been and continues to be god-awful.
I can best describe it, Paul, as a hole in your heart. You're quite right. It never goes away. And even though I know Eric is up in heaven looking down and telling me to suck it up, Dad, and no, it never goes away.
Well, you pointed out, too, that, you know, people who have passed in this manner, they want you to go on and have an enjoyable life. They don't want you to suffer.
That's correct. I you know, they want you to go on with your life. They want you to, shall we say, live for them. Much easier said than done.
If you have any questions for Tom Hunt on this issue or any other, please give us a call, 508-996-0500. We always enjoy listening to the WBSM audience, regardless of what the topic is. I started my show today talking about safety on the roadway. And, you know, we only have so many resources, whether it's, you know, police or, you know, the state police on the highways or what have you. And it just irks me that every day we pick up the newspaper, we turn on the radio, and it's like, oh, there's another death on 195. Oh, there's another death on 140. And these are automobile accidents, but they're still accidents having to do with the roadway, right? And so it's just overlooked. You know what I mean? Like, in the chances of that happening to you, you know, dying on the roadway, whether it's a bicycle or a car, is many times more than, say, like a homicide. Yet those things get all the attention.
That's very true, Paul. And I wish I had a little better answer than I have. Except that, you know, bicycles have the same right of way on the road as do automobiles. Bicyclists are expected to obey all traffic signals, stop signs, one ways. And for the most part, they do. But also, automobiles have to realize that they are a 2,000-pound machine, and someone much better at physics could figure out how a 2,000-pound piece of steel going 55 miles an hour, what the impact would be on a bicyclist. But yeah, we all have to be conversant with the fact that both bicycles and automobiles have equal rights to the roadways.
Drives me crazy when I'm going down 195, and it seems like it happens all the time. And I'm going, like, you know, I'm going, say, even 70, right? Which I don't think is, like, you know, a wussy speed or anything. And people just come up and go past me at 110, weaving in and out of the roadway. And I'm thinking to myself, somebody's going to get killed here. And yet, again, it just doesn't get the attention. And, of course, on the, say, like a Route 6 or something like that, where there are bicyclists who have the right of way, or in the city or someplace like that, or like what happened to Eric, you know, which was an accident, maybe not somebody being negligent. But the point is that, you know, the roadway accidents just don't get the attention that they deserve, and it just drives me crazy.
Paul, I've never quite understood why when we have, for the most part, 55-mile-an-hour speed limits in this country, why we need automobiles that can go as high as 110 or 115 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. That sounds inconsistent and counterintuitive to me. But you're right. speed kills. In Eric's case, he was actually struck by an MBTA bus on Huntington Avenue. Apparently, Eric's bicycle wheels got stuck in the railroad tracks, and he fell into the bus. It was truly an accident. No charges were ever brought against the bus driver, for which I was grateful. I think it would have been even worse to myself and my family if criminal charges were brought against the driver.
Well, as much as I've gone on a rant about, you know, people that are speeding and people that have disregard for other drivers and people that have disregard for cyclists, on the other side of that coin, sometimes something is just a horrible accident.
Yes, yes. In fact, I would probably, I've never studied this, but I would venture a guess that most collisions are accidents. I don't think anyone ever gets in their car at 7 o'clock in the morning on their way to work and decide they're going to hit a cyclist or a jogger or a pedestrian that day. But I think that's why we need better controls on our roadways, perhaps wider roadways, and certainly we need both bike lanes and bike tracks.
Well, I know the mayor in Boston is a big advocate of these bike lanes, and some people are saying, well, maybe they've overdone the bike lanes a little bit, but given the situation that you have experienced, you believe that the bike lanes is a good idea?
Oh, yes, yes. And not only bike lanes, which are lanes on the side of the road that are painted over with a bicycle logo, which are not always obeyed by automobile drivers, but actually what I call bike tracks, where there is a physical barrier between the roadway and the bike.
All right, and you had some talking points there. I didn't want to leave anything out. Have we covered everything having to do with the ride of silence and your experience, of course, with Eric and so forth?
Yes, one more thing. The ride is rain or shine. It's impossible to book an alternative date. So whether it's raining or snowing or sleeting, the ride will go forward. And again, we're asking people to get there at 6:45. I will explain the route to them. I will explain how we need to be in single file. We need to go at a low speed. And I will tell them the length of the ride, which is about 8 miles, takes about 35 minutes. I've done it a couple of times in the last 2 weeks. So it will be during light time. It will not be in darkness, and we'll be back to the high school around 7:40.
Well, Tom and I have known each other for many, many years, and I'm always complimenting Tom because he's a little bit older than me. Not that much older than me, but he's a little older than me. But Tom, you are tall, you are slim, and you can ride a bike pretty long distance. Is that right?
Not quite as long as I did 5 years ago. But yes, I'm an avid cyclist. I belonged for many years to the Rhode Island Wheelmen. I enjoy it. It's healthy. It's unlike golf where you have to get three other participants to make up a foursome. You just simply go when the spirit hits you. And for me, that's probably 3 or 4 times a week.
All right. Well, while we have Tom here, we would be remiss if we didn't at least ask him some of his opinions on what's going on with local and national politics, given his background being a political analyst. We'll pick that up in just a moment. By the way, if you're the caller on the line, please stay there. We're going to take you right after this break. You're listening to The Paul Santo Show here on WBSM. I'm here on WBSM. Political analyst also talking about the Ride of Silence, which is coming up this Wednesday down in Dartmouth, Paden Aram, I believe. And if you want to ask Tom about that or anything political, please give us a call here at 508-996-0500. 800-500, and we'll get you right onto the program. Good morning. You're on WBSM.
Hi, Paul and Tom. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Tom, I'm very sorry for the loss of your son. I'm familiar with what you've gone through. I've been in the bicycle business for 35 years, and lost friends that were rode on the road. I know Lance Armstrong, and he's been hit 7 times, and I survived that. I've actually been hit twice. Luckily, I was hit in a way that I could get off the bike, and that was both times were in Newport, Rhode Island. And I think it's getting even more difficult today to ride on the road because before cell phones, there were less distractions, and now it's like what Paul was saying about cars racing and the distraction of cell phones. It's really, really difficult. One thing I was going to mention was you were talking about bike paths, which are great, and the local community, Massachusetts, is doing a great job of connecting bike paths around. I know they're trying to get the connection out to Falmouth, but in countries like in Europe, Germany, it's the legality is that for every mile of new roadway, they have to put a bike path in next to it. So it's pretty common if you're riding down the highway in Germany that you see a bike path right off the median. Like if you're riding down 24, you'll see a bike path with a guardrail between it. But they promote cycling, and cycling is part of the culture. Here, people, when you bring up cycling, most people grimace about riding around cyclists and whatever bad experiences they've had. But there needs to be a cultural change here in the U.S. because cycling's not going away. It's growing. I think that, there needs to be a lot more done.
Well, thank you for that call. I was in Amsterdam about 3 or 4 years ago. There's actually more bicyclists and bicycles in Amsterdam than there are automobiles. And you're quite right. The culture in Europe is cycling. It is the second most popular sport in Europe after what they call football, what we call soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And cyclists are everywhere, and somehow they all seem to coexist. We all know the automobile is king. But you're right. You know, I've done every year. I do Martha's Vineyard in the spring and Nantucket in the fall. And every year I notice they have more and more bike paths.
I wanted to ask the caller quick question. You know why?
Yeah,
because Mayor Wu in Boston, pretty liberal mayor, is all in favor of bike lanes. And a lot of the people on the other side of the aisle are always kind of poking fun of her a little bit and saying, well, you know, in January and February when there's a snowstorm and there's a big traffic jam, we're wasting all this room on the bike lanes and blah, blah, blah. You know, so you seem to be on the side of having the bike lanes. You are with our liberal Mayor Wu.
Yeah, I don't want to put politics in the middle of it, Paul. I know you do, but that's okay.
No, I'm just saying.
I'm just looking at right and wrong issues. And I think that what bike paths do, especially in Boston, actually does slow the traffic down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Boston's a bit different, or inner city is different, because you're not dealing with someone doing 50 miles an hour. Maybe in some cases, but those bike paths. The other thing too is, like you said, in Amsterdam, they paint their bike paths different colors, and I've noticed they started doing that in New Bedford and in Boston. And that's really handy because it tells the driver there's a double yellow line, but oh yeah, there's a big green bike path. Don't cross into it. And I think that's super healthy. Just putting up signs is not enough. You really have to take over the roadway, and that will change culture. That definitely will change things. But bikes are not going away. They're actually growing pretty massively.
So the change in culture here in our country, that's a thing that you seem to think is really needed.
Well, it's Well, there's a lot of things they could do, but I think that if you want a visual, the painted bike lanes are a great start. It doesn't affect the drivers, but it does call out that this is a bike path, and you know, you don't, most people drive through crosswalks when someone's standing on a curb.
Right.
Those need to be painted too.
Okay. Anyway. All right. Have a great weekend. Thanks for the call.
Take care, Tom.
All right. 508-996-0500. Thoughts on the comments by the caller? Tom.
Well, you know, he's absolutely right. Automobiles and cyclists can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for them to be antagonistic to one another. Cyclists should ride only in the cycle lanes. Automobiles should only be driven in the automobile lanes. And if each side respects their own lane, to coin a phrase, then I think that's a first step in a very positive direction.
We're talking to Tom Hunt, former member of the New Bedford School Committee, also local political analyst, talking about the Ride of Silence, which is going to be held this coming Wednesday in honor of his late son, Eric, who passed away about a decade and a half ago in a terrible, tragic accident on a bicycle in Boston. You have any questions for Tom, give us a call, 508-996-0500. While we have you here, you know, there's a lot of things going on, of course, politically, locally, and nationally. Maybe we'll start out with some of the local stuff here. The mayor indicated, Mayor Mitchell, and I know you're very good friends with Mayor Mitchell. You've been a supporter of Mayor Mitchell. You make no bones about that. And I know you think he's done a terrific job as mayor. You know, he decided to take his full salary for the first time. And he made clear when he was on WBSM, hey, this isn't really a raise. I'm just taking the salary that I was supposed to get all this time. And I'm now taking it the last couple of years. So, of course, that opened up the floodgates of people speculating whether John would run again in 2027. Now, it's only 2025, but you know how it is, right? People tend to like to look ahead. What do you think the chances are of John running in 2027? And, you know, if he decides to run or not run, what would happen? Do you think that would open the floodgates of people wanting to run?
The answer to the second question is yes. I think if you have an open seat for mayor, you will have a multitude of candidates. That's been the city's history. As for John's future, I will answer that question, but I did want to make one more comment about the Ride of Silence. It is open to cyclists of all abilities. The only requirement is that you have a helmet. It goes at a very slow speed. So, again, any age, any ability, you're all welcome. In terms of the mayor, I am a supporter. I am a friend. And like many others, supporters and friends, we always saw Mayor Mitchell as someone well capable of going on to higher office. I know he enjoys very much his job as mayor. He's told me that. He is not up this time in 2025. The city council and the school board are up, but the mayor was awarded a four-year contract by the voters a few years back, so he will not be on this year's ballot. Whether he will be on the ballot in 2027, I have no idea. And if I did have an idea, I wouldn't share it with your audience. I will say this, though, having served in office, elective office for 12 years, many of these decisions come down to personal matters. How much time can I afford to be away from my family? What is my continuing level of enthusiasm for the job? Do I wish to go back to private life? Do I wish to move on to other opportunities? And I think it's a very, very, very personal decision and frequently is not made actually until almost the deadline for filing papers. So to answer your question, I have no inside information, but like many others, I see John Mitchell as well capable of holding higher office.
So a lot of times people think that it's a politically motivated decision. And you're here to say that a lot of times it's not. A lot of times it is those other family and personal matters that come into play.
Sure. Anything from age to health. I know we all watch CNN, and doesn't Congress look like a great job? But, you know, you're in Congress 4 days a week, and you're back in your district 3 days a week. You have to run for re-election every 2 years. And as one congressman told me, he seemed to spend half his time being bumped off of airline flights and spending most of his time in airport terminals. So I think, you know, you look at, you know, the age of your children. You look at whether or not you want to run for office and continually have to fundraise all the time. And you make a personal decision.
It could very well be, and probably is most likely, that John Mitchell himself hasn't decided. I mean, we're 2 years away, right? So, I mean, why would he make a decision now that he doesn't have to make until 2 years from now?
Well, we've been talking about the mayor's race, but next year there'll be a congressional race because Congress is up every 2 years. Next year there'll be a U.S. Senate race. Next year there'll be a district attorney's race. So while we're talking about what will the mayor do in 2027, you know, some people out there are wondering what he'll be doing in 2026. And again, I have absolutely no insight to share with you on that.
I know it's a long way off, but one of the shows here on the radio, they were talking about who might throw their hat in the ring if Mayor Mitchell decided not to run. And of course, you got the city council. You've got Tony Cabral, who ran before. You've got Scott Lang, who sometimes some rumors out there that he would like to come back. What do you think about all of the above?
I think for the city council, it's very hard to run as a ward councilor. You only represent 1/6 of the city. We have 6 wards, which is another way of saying you're unknown for the most part in 5/6 of the city. So I think if we're talking about the council, you really have to talk about at large councilors, and we have 2 who have run for mayor in the past, Wynda Morad and Brian Gomes. When you talk about members of the legislature, Representative Cabral has run in the past. Unlike a city councilor, Representative Cabral would not have to give up his position because he's elected in even-numbered years. So that could be a factor. But I think it really depends mostly on what the mayor does. It's always difficult to defeat an incumbent in Massachusetts. It's always difficult to defeat an incumbent mayor who for the most part, have very large war chests.
If you'd like to chat with Attorney Tom Hunt about political matters, being a political analyst, or if you'd like to ask him more questions about the right of silence, give us a call here at 508-996-0500. I also wanted to ask Tom, because we're talking about his political ideology. He says he tends to be right of center. He's a Democrat, but he's right of center. What does he think about our president? I'm going to ask him that right after this. One of our callers said that they saw this gentleman, Matt Anderson, in concert. He said he was fantastic, so I pay attention to the audience. Great job with Ain't No Sunshine right there on WBSM. Paul Santos here with political analyst Tom Hunt talking about the right of silence. But before we spin back to that, your thoughts on the President of the United States?
Someone mentioned the other day that President Trump may be the only politician in the country who's actually getting in trouble for doing exactly what he promised to do during the campaign. He talked about closing the border. He talked about trimming the bureaucracy. He talked about cutting taxes. And he's done all these things. I think his most fervent supporters would, of course, appreciate it if he could keep his mouth shut more frequently than he does, because he has a tendency to say silly things. Like a lot of Democrats, I actually agree with about 60 to 65% of what he's talking about, cutting taxes, reducing bureaucracy, securing the border, supporting our veterans, supporting our military, doing something about this abominable tariff situation and, you know, the Chinese currency scams, the endless wars. But he apparently has very little appreciation of the rule of law. He's been told by numerous courts he can't do X, and yet he continues to do X. And that's very disappointing to me.
Isn't it dangerous to disregard rulings by the court, which seems to be what has happened on a number of occasions?
Paul, in 1957, a single federal judge in Arkansas demanded that the Arkansas, Little Rock, Arkansas public schools be desegregated, particularly Central High School, which by its name was directly in the center of town. The authorities in Arkansas ignored that directive. So what did Dwight Eisenhower, a Republican president, a man who grew up in the South, Texas, a man who served in a segregated army, he sent in the 101st Airborne to escort the children to school. You cannot disobey a federal court officer if you are the president of the United States.
All right. Any questions for Tom Hunt? 508-996-0500. Give us a call and let us know what you want to say about any of the issues that Tom has brought up. And we're going to circle back to the right of silence in just a moment. But what about the ICE situation, where it does seem like, hey, look, somebody's breaking the law, they should be held accountable, but it seems like things have gone a little overboard where, you know, if somebody is apprehended, there should be some process, some kind of due process to determine whether or not the person that you apprehended is what you say they are.
Yeah, how more basic can it be than if you are out to apprehend Harry, you apprehend Leo by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And shouldn't Leo have his day in court as opposed to being shipped off to Louisiana or God knows where without an opportunity to say, hey, you got the wrong guy? I don't pretend to be an expert on immigration law. I do respect the rule of law. I am the grandson of four immigrants from Ireland who came to this country lawfully, studied for the naturalization test, took the test, passed the test, and became American citizens around the end of the 19th century. And without them coming to America, I wouldn't be sitting in front of you today. Mm-hmm. So I have no problems at all with legal immigration. In fact, I think it's a good idea. Clearly, we need some level of workforce in this country. But, you know, legal versus illegal, to you and me as warriors is a huge difference.
Now, a few weeks back, there was a little bit of a local controversy whereby the proposal was to move up the primary election. It is still 4 weeks ahead of the local election. And I believe state officials had asked local communities to move it back because so many more of our population loves to do the mail-in ballots. And the city of New Bedford here, Mr. DiBritto, of course, the gentleman who is in charge of the election commission, the chairman of the election commission, thought that he needed more time in order to properly count the ballots and that we're putting like an undue pressure on the election officials when you could have easily moved it back a number of weeks. And a lot of people really get upset about that. Like, hey, it's been 4 weeks forever. My thought on that was 90% of the people don't vote anyway. So if you move it back another 3 weeks, you certainly can publicize it. So I thought it was an issue was much ado about nothing. Your thoughts?
Well, 4 weeks is the minimum statutory period. Obviously, there has to be a few days set aside for recounts. There has to be a few days set aside for printing the ballots. You've mentioned early voting, which is becoming more and more and more popular. All of that really stretches the local officials to get it done within 4 weeks. Right now, the primary in New Bedford is the first week of October. The final is the first week of November. If it's pushed back into the second week of September, how does that hurt anybody? Clearly, it's not interfering with the first day of school. It's not during a summer vacation, if it were in July or August. So it's hard to make a decision, a rational decision, against moving it back. I know the officials who are elected sort of enjoy the 4 weeks because that does not give a challenger a great deal of time to put together a final election after a preliminary election. But no, I'm all in favor of it being pushed back 2 or 3 weeks.
And you and I have talked about many times, especially on election night, and we can bring it up here quickly, the level of participation compared to what it was. And you think of that great race in 1979 between Brian Lawler and Jack Markey. And then you think of the one, say, with Kalis and Tierney. And then even the one with the current mayor in 2011, John Mitchell versus Linda Morad versus Representative Cabral. You would think that that one would have got like a 70 or 80% voter turnout. And it was higher that year, but it still wasn't what it was in the 70s and the 80s. And now the numbers are just dropping to the deplorable level of sometimes even single digits. What can we do about that? Anything?
Well, we've talked about this numerous times on Election Day. We've talked about perhaps having an election on a weekend, on a Saturday, as opposed to the Tuesday. I'm not really sure what can be done. The polling places in New Bedford are, for almost without exception, convenient to the voters, parking, handicapped access, well lit. As you mentioned, we do have early voting and voting by mail. I think the city has done everything they can do as a city. I think it's really up to the voters. I do remember that election in 79. There was a 74% turnout. I was on the ballot that year. And I do remember the election 2 years ago when we had an 8 or 9% turnout. I don't think the turnout, unfortunately, is going to be great this fall. We have no mayor's race, and that is the marquee race in the city. So while I my fingers are crossed, hoping for a good turnout, realistically, based on past experiences, I'm not sure that's going to happen.
All right, we'll be back with more with Tom Hunt in just a moment here on the Paul Santos Show on WBSM, 508-996-0500. We'll be right back. Absolutely hilarious comedy of Carlos Z. That's tomorrow morning, 10:30, ABC 6. We're here with Tom Hunt. Remaining moments, he's here mostly to talk about the Ride of Silence. It happens this coming Wednesday, 7 p.m. You can show up at 6:45, and it's really something that goes all around the globe. Tom's going to host it for the first time. Cyclists will take to the roads in silent procession to honor cyclists who have been killed or injured while cycling on public roadways. The exact thing happened to Tom's son in 2010, and Tom is actually hosting the event this year. Let's go right back to the phones here while we have a chance. Hello, you're on WBSM.
Good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Hunt. Yuli Fafiolos.
Good morning.
Well, Mr. Hunt, I have a question for you, and it has to do with the school department, since you were on it. I've been trying to tell people that they're the only school committee elected people in New Bedford that don't get paid. Do you think they should get paid after what Linda Moray gave a dog catcher, $50,000 raise to $100,000? Shouldn't the school committee at least get some kind of a stipend for all they do? Because they do a lot more work now than they did back in the 60s and 70s.
That's a good question. That's a good question. What do you think, Tom?
Well, most urban school committees in Massachusetts are paid. Brockton, Fall River, Quincy, Worcester, Boston is paid. Boston is not an elected school board. They are appointed, but they're nevertheless paid. I think the concept of pay versus stipend really has to be understood in the expense necessary to get elected to the job. The caller is absolutely right. This particular school board in New Bedford, and I do follow them, are very active in terms of what they're doing for the system and the number of meetings they have. But unless you have some way of recouping your campaign expenses, what's going to happen is you're going to have the same old people getting reelected time after time after time. And I've always felt that of all the elected jobs in the United States, the one where you need new thoughts and new ideas should be on the school board. I would agree that some salary or some stipend should be provided.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt, because I know you've been there, done that.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Have a good weekend. All right, couple minutes left here with Tom. This time you're actually hosting the Ride of Silence as opposed to participating in it. So what exactly is the difference when you host it?
Well, quite frankly, not that much. You advertise it, as I'm doing here this morning, as I will be tomorrow with Jim Phillips. You let people know. The Ride of Silence has a very, very excellent webpage, and the Dartmouth Ride is on the webpage. But I want to point out two more things, Paul. All you need to participate is a bicycle and a helmet. Any cyclist of any ability can participate. It's a very short ride. It's a very slow ride. You don't have to be the second coming of Lance Armstrong. Normally, they will get a volunteer, perhaps a serious cyclist who will pull up the rear and help any stragglers along. So if you're not a champion cyclist racer, don't think there's not a place for you this Wednesday.
All right. And of course, as we said before, in 2010, Tom Hunt's son Eric was involved in an awful accident whereby he was struck by a bus, not the bus driver's fault, just the accident. And he was riding a bicycle and the tire got kind of mixed up in the groove. And unfortunately, his life was taken at that time. And, you know, as you said before, that hole in the heart never gets filled in, but you're doing what he would want you to do. I think he would be proud of what you're doing, participating in this, and I think most of the people in the audience would agree.
My favorite story about my